So our topic today is the Ultra Vires update. And Ultra Vires was seldom used to describe the kind of cases that we are going to talk about until 2009. In the last decade, the number of Ultra Vires claims has exploded. Between the end of the conference 2 years ago and last year's conference, there were, I think, 70 reported appellate decisions on Ultra Vires cases. It's calmed down a little bit between the end of last year's conference and this year. I think there were 44 reported appellate decisions. So if this is not an area that you practice in much, that's why I think they've carved out what really ought to be a portion of the case law update and devoted a full, last year 30 minutes, this year 45 minutes to just this one subset of the case law update. But before we start on the cases, I want to take just a minute for those who don't practice much in this area to briefly review what we talk about when we talk about ultra vires. As I said, prior to 2009, it was not a term that appeared much in the case law. And the Texas doctrine of ultra vires appeared to track the federal doctrine, which is to say, a plaintiff could bring what is known as an ultra vires claim when a state agency official was acting clearly outside of his or her jurisdiction, where that state official clearly had no authority to act at all. A plaintiff was able to bring an ultra vires claim to get relief from those illegal acts. Prior to 2009, a claim that an agency official just got it wrong, for example, say an agency was issuing a permit and a plaintiff felt that the agency had misinterpreted or misapplied the law, there was a remedy for that, and depending on the circumstances, the remedy might be an administrative appeal or a writ of mandamus or a suit for declaratory judgment. Likewise, if state official refused to carry out some action that he or she was duty-bound to carry out, say, for example, you have a trial and you win a judgment and the judge simply refuses to sign the judgment. The judge has a duty, a non-delegable, non-discretionary duty to sign your judgment. That was correctable by mandamus. That all changed in 2009 when the Texas Supreme Court decided the Heinrich case, which is discussed briefly in the short paper that we prepared. But that case concerned a widow who was entitled to pension benefits based on her late husband's employment. And she claimed that the pension board had acted unlawfully and in violation of the statute by reducing her pension benefits. And the pension board had their claim was that they had interpreted the statute correctly and the rules and regulations correctly, and they were required to reduce her pension benefits. And she sued on a number of different theories, and it went up to the Supreme Court, and the court remanded it back for repleting, saying that it was possible for her to state a claim not against the board, but against the board members in their official capacity for acting ultra vires, that they had acted without authority. And importantly, the court didn't limit ultra vires to the traditional understanding that the board had acted without jurisdiction. They were clearly acting within an area where they had jurisdiction. But it seemed to be saying that there were at least some subset of cases in which a state actor simply got it wrong, misinterpreted a statute or a rule, misapplied a rule, that you could bypass administrative appeal, bypass traditional remedies, and sue the state actor, and through the state actor, because it's in an official capacity, the state directly. So as I said, since that decision in 2009, the number of these cases has exploded. I'm not going to spend time walking you through all of the developments, but simply to say that it appears in the last decade that a two-track system has developed for challenging agency interpretations of statutes. If your claim is that the statute itself is invalid,